Chapter 21. The City County Building in Sault Ste. Marie, perhaps the ugliest building in the entire Upper Peninsula, is where you find the county holding cells, along with the county sheriff's office and the Sault Ste. Marie Police Department. It's all in that one gray rectangle on Court Street. They talk about renovating the place, or moving out the city police, or a dozen other things, but they never talk about actually knocking it down with bulldozers, which is what they should have done a long time ago. It was getting close to midnight when I walked through the door. In this city, there are few people working at midnight, unless they happen to be serving alcohol on Portage Street. I walked over to the desk and rang the little bell. A county deputy came out, and I asked him if I could see someone in the holding cell. He told me I should come back the following morning. "I really need to see him," I said. "I'd appreciate it."
"And you really need to come back tomorrow morning," he said. "I know we've got a few gentlemen down there right now. They all need to settle down and dry out a little, if you know what I mean. We'll sort them out in the morning."
I wasn't sure what to try next, but that's when I saw Chief Roy Maven walking past the front door. He must have come out a side entrance, and he was probably on his way to his car now, after a long night in the office. Something special must have kept him here. I didn't care what. I was just happy to see him. An incredible statement to make, I realize. After a full week of dealing with law enforcement officials at every level, from that state trooper I talked to at the airport, to my friend and maybe now former friend Janet Long, the FBI agent in Detroit, to Chief Benali of the Bay Mills Tribal Police, here at last was the man with whom I had the longest history. Chief Roy Maven of the Sault Ste. Marie Police Department, known affectionately around here as the human buzzsaw, known unaffectionately by a number of other words, some of which correspond to parts of the male anatomy. We'd taken an instant chemical dislike to each other. The very first time we met, and things had gone downhill fast from there. Then, finally, we got to work on something together. Something terrible. It's funny how going through something like that with another person will make you see him differently. I wouldn't exactly call us best friends now, but we had made our peace.
"Chief!"
I yelled as I went out the door.
"Wait up a minute!"
He turned and looked around with all the good humor you'd expect from a man who'd just worked about 8 hours of overtime.
"McKnight, what the hell's going on?"
"I've got a friend in one of the holding cells. I need to get him out."
"I don't have anybody down there right now. I can't help you."
He shares the cells with the county. He pretty much shares everything with the county, and he usually doesn't get the best of any of it. His office, for instance, somehow doesn't have a window.
"It's not one of yours," I said. "It's county. Some guys got picked up at the Cozy out in Brimley."
"I know where the Cozy is, McKnight. I was drinking there when you were still a beat cop in Detroit. And thank you for answering your own question. You have to talk to the county guys."
"They say I have to wait until morning. I was hoping you could just let me go see him at least, find out what happened. That's all I'm asking."
He was standing there with the door to his car open, just a few minutes away from a late dinner and a bed. He looked up at the sky, shaking his head like somebody up there owed him an explanation.
"Why did you move up here?"
he said to me.
"Seriously, why?"
"Just a few minutes," I said. "I'd really appreciate it." He owed me. That was the thing I wasn't saying. He owed me, and he knew it, and I knew it. And that's why he finally slammed his door shut and led me back into the building. A few minutes later, the master door to the holding cells was opened, and I was led inside.
5 minutes, he said to me. "Knock on the door when you're done. The deputy will let you out. I'm going home now."
"Thanks, Chief."
His response to that was the dull clang of the jailhouse door closing. I walked down the line of cells and found the last two occupied. There were 5 men in all, and whoever split them up obviously didn't understand the history. The 3 men in the one cell were all old-timers from the res, more faces that I vaguely recognized, either from events at Vinny's mother's house or from just seeing them walking down the road. If it was winter, they were sure to be so underdressed you'd wonder how they didn't freeze to death. These were men who grew up on the res, who remembered how it was before the casinos came. These were men who knew Lou LeBlanc from way back when. They all knew about Lou being banned from the res forever. They were all there to answer the call when he came back, 30 years later. In the second cell sat Lou and his old nemesis, Henry Carrick. Henry was sitting against the back wall. Lou was up front by the bars. They both had scraped-up faces that would look much worse by the next morning. I stood in between the two cells, so I could see them all at once. "Aren't you guys a little old for this?" The three men on my left started laughing. Henry and Lou just sat there like they were made of stone. I went down to the end of the cell closest to him and knelt down on the floor. "Okay, so what happened?" I said. "Or is it already pretty obvious?"
"I stopped in at the cozy," Lou said. "My old pal, Henry over here, he was sitting at the bar. He told me I had to leave. I tried to point out to him that I wasn't actually on the reservation, but that didn't seem to matter. He made some calls, and next thing you know, he's got three of his buddies, and they're all trying to start something with me. I figured I'd already given Vinny enough free shots tonight, so yeah, this time I fought back. When the owner of the cozy couldn't get us to take it outside, he called 911, and that's how we ended up here."
"Did the Bay Mills cops bring you?"
"No. There was a regular county car down the road. I tried to explain to them that I was just defending myself. I might have gotten a little belligerent at that point."
"Lou, did you hit a cop?"
"No, I didn't, I swear. I was just trying to make them understand, but they didn't want to hear it. They just called another car, and they brought us all down here."
He dabbed at the corner of his eye and looked at the trace of blood on his fingers.
"So it sounds like you need to spend the night," I said. "That's pretty standard around here. They don't have enough manpower to do much else after hours unless they absolutely have to."
"I can't do that."
"I think you've done a lot worse," I said. "A night in the county jail, you can do that standing on your head."
"You don't understand. They took down our names before they dumped us down here, but they didn't really process us. You know what I mean?"
"At this hour, I'm not surprised. Like I said..."
"Alex, do you remember what I told you earlier today? About being on parole?"
"Yeah, but this is just a routine disturbance at a bar. They'll just kick you out in the morning."
"I didn't tell you everything today," he said. "I didn't tell you that I wasn't supposed to leave the state under any circumstances. Technically, I violated my parole as soon as I got on that airplane."
"Okay. Is there anything else you want to tell me?"
He lowered his head, and his long hair fell down to cover his face.
"I've done a lot of really bad stuff in my life," he said. "You don't even know the half of it. I've had this feeling that the next time I see a jail cell, it'll be the only thing I ever see for the rest of my life. Just being here right now. I can't take it, Alex."
"Just take it easy. I know I owe you one today. Let me figure this out."
I owed him one, all right. Never mind the rest of the week. I owed him a huge debt just from what he'd done in that swamp alone. Speaking of debts...
"Just sit tight," I said, standing up. "I've got one card I can play."
I knew exactly where to go. I knew exactly how well I'd be received when I got there. But I went anyway. Chief Maven's house was a raised ranch over on Summit Street. I parked on the street and walked up to his door. It was the ass end of midnight, but I rang the bell and waited for a minute. Then I rang it again. The door opened, and Maven looked out at me, with something that I probably wouldn't call excitement or delight. He had obviously gone right to bed when he had gotten home. Now he was wrapped up in a bathrobe and blinking in the glare from the porch light.
"What in goddamned hell," he said slowly. "Do you have any idea what time it is?"
"I need 1 minute, Chief, then I'll leave."
"You're seriously standing here right now? I'm not dreaming this."
1 minute, I said. "Please, let me come in."
It was so outrageous. I think he was kind of stunned. He just stepped back and let me come through the door. Once I was in his front hallway,
I just stood there and told him what I wanted. "There's one man in the holding cells," I said. "His name is Louis LeBlanc. He needs to be released immediately."
"You have lost your mind, McKnight. I knew it would happen eventually."
"It was just a stupid bar fight. Four guys jumped him, and he wouldn't take his beating like a good boy. That's it. He'll never be charged with anything. None of them will. They'll just get kicked out tomorrow morning."
"Then why?"
"Because I'm asking you. That's why."
"He's in county custody. You know I can't do anything."
"If you call the sheriff and ask him yourself, he'll do it. You know that."
"Are you kidding me? Call the sheriff in the middle of the night? Wake him up and ask him to go down to the office?"
"He doesn't have to go anywhere," I said. "He can call it in and go back to bed."
"I can't believe this,"
he said, turning from me and walking halfway down the hall.
"Of all the bizarre, stupid things I've ever heard."
"He was helping me, Chief. He was helping me the same way I once helped you. So I owe him one, just like you owe me one."
"Oh, here it is,"
he said, turning around to face me.
"I was wondering when you'd pull that on me."
"I didn't think I ever would, but you know it's true. You owe me exactly one big favor, no questions asked. Just one. This is it." He looked at the floor and shook his head. "One phone call to your buddy the sheriff. Tell him it's important. Apologize for how late it is. Just tell him he has to call over and spring a man who shouldn't be there in the first place. Then you're done."
"Then we're square," he said.
"Then we're square, forever." He let out a long breath and walked into the kitchen to get the phone.
"My wife's sister wanted us to move to Arizona," he said as he dialed. "I said I'd never live in a state that has rattlesnakes and scorpions. But you know what I didn't think of?"
I stood there watching him as he waited for the sheriff to pick up on the other end. I didn't figure I was supposed to answer his question.
"No Alex McKnight in Arizona," he said. "That should have sold me."
The sheriff picked up. Maven started talking. A few minutes later, I was in my truck, heading back to the city county building. And Maven and I were square. I was waiting by my truck when Lou walked out of the place. He got in, and we took off, back toward paradise.
"Stop at the cozy," he said. "My car's still there."
"I think we made a mistake," I said as I drove. "We should have told those guys about Corvo's deadline today, both of them. We had all day to make a plan together."
"I thought we were giving Vinny one more night to rest,"
says the man who goaded him into a fight.
"No, it was the right call," he said, looking out the window. "Give it tonight. I think you'll have a clear answer in the morning. In fact, I'm sure of it. You'll wake up, and it'll be right there in front of you."
That didn't work the last time.
"Have faith," he said. "I believe you'll see it."
I didn't feel like arguing. We'd all talk about it tomorrow, no matter what. If the answer magically came to me in the middle of the night, or not. I pulled into the cozy parking lot and let him out.
"I am going to drop off those things at my daughter's houses," he said. "Just leave them on the doorsteps. Some of my old mementos from when I was growing up here. I still don't think I'm ready to face them yet. Vinny's been tough enough."
"I thought you weren't supposed to be on the res."
"Henry and his posse are still in jail tonight, remember? Now's my chance."
I had to smile at that one. I told him I'd see him in the morning. Then I left. As I was driving through the res, I saw the lights on at Buck's house. On an impulse, I pulled into his driveway. It was after 1 in the morning now, but I heard music playing. I knocked on the front door. When nobody answered, I ran through all of the horrible scenarios that this week had taught me to expect. But when I pushed open the door and called his name, he answered me from somewhere in the back of the house. I walked through and found him on the back deck. He was in the hot tub.
Sorry to bother you, I said. I saw the lights on and I wanted to check on you.
It's all good, he said. It was just his head and shoulders above the swirling water.
Everybody's home, safe. It's over now.
That's what you think, Buck, the thought burning in my head, along with Lou's doubts about this man, about having him involved in whatever we decided to do the next day. I've been pretty hard on you, I said. I know you didn't want any of this to happen.
You were on the money, Alex. I'm an idiot.
How did the questioning go?
Mom, sure, I'm not done with it, but the tribe's already sent over a lawyer to help me. That state guy, he was a real piece of work, but I think Chief Benali's on my side.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, even told me today that there's no way the DA would want to prosecute me. Everybody else on the res wants to beat my ass, but they're all glad I'm safe at least.
He's strong, I thought. He's built like a linebacker. And I know he'll come through if he has the right motivation, like looking after Vinny. Listen, I said, I need you to come out and have breakfast with me and Vinny and Lou tomorrow. We have to talk about something very important.
What is it?
I'll tell you tomorrow. Just get some rest, okay? I said goodnight to him and left him there, soaking in the hot water. It was another cold summer night in the UP. As I went out to my truck, I looked up at the stars. The rest of the reservation was quiet. I didn't see anyone else around. I drove back to paradise. Once again, I tried to sleep and failed. I was lying in my bed, staring at the ceiling. I was already imagining how the whirlwind would come. Maybe a car, as long and sleek as that cigarette boat, driving silently up my road. I wondered how we could ever be ready to face the men who would step out of that car. Then I heard a soft knock on the door. Before I could say a word, Lou cracked the door open and stuck his head in.
Alex, are you up?
Come on in, I said.
What's going on?
He came into the cabin. He was walking slowly, and his face was already starting to swell up from the two fights he'd been in.
You need some ice, I said. Let me get some. Only if it's in a glass. Whatever you have. Whiskey, gin, I don't care.
I'd taken my watch off and put it on the table. I picked it up now and looked at it. It was just after 3 in the morning.
What's going on?
I said. You look wrecked. You should be sleeping.
I just had to talk to you. Sit down for 1 minute after you get that drink for me, please.
I looked for the bottle of Jim Beam. Then I remembered it was empty. It was the bottle Vinny and I had killed that night, not that long ago. The same night he got the call to come pick up Buck at the airport. I only have cheap stuff, I said. I think somebody gave me this a long time ago. It's not even open.
Sounds perfect.
He sat at the table, looking at nothing. I made the drink and put in a few ice cubes. I put it down in front of him, and he took a long swallow. The room was dark, except for the one light on over the sink. The way the light hit him, it picked up all of the old scars on his face, along with all of the new damage. He looked old and tired.
It was the best of times, he said. It was the worst of times.
Lou, what are you talking about? What's wrong? He took another drink.
When I was growing up here, he said, there was this old Ojibwe story I heard, and there's a couple different variations to it, but the basic idea is this. A boy is living with his grandmother, who's very old. Before she dies, she says to him, you're going to be all alone now, but before long, a stranger is going to come to you. I want you to do whatever he says. Then she dies.
He tipped the glass again. Then he went on.
A few days later, a stranger comes to the village, and he says, who is the best man among you? The elders gather to talk about it, then they send the boy to the stranger. The boy has a meal with the stranger, and finally, the stranger tells him why he has come to the village. He tells him that he was sent there by the Creator to test him, to see if he and his people are worthy. The boy asks him what the test is, and the stranger says they have to fight each other. If the boy wins, he lives. If he loses, he dies.
He stopped again. He didn't take another drink. He looked at the glass for a long moment before continuing.
The boy agrees to the test, so he and the stranger go outside to a clearing in the forest, and they begin to fight. All night long they fight, until they are both so tired they can't continue. They both sleep during the day, until it is time to get up and eat and regain their strength. They have their meal together, then they go back to the clearing to fight again. A great battle, back and forth, neither one of them gaining the upper hand, until once again they are too tired to continue. They sleep through the day, until it's time to get up and eat together. Then once more they fight.
I watched him as he told me the story. It felt like the whole world was slipping away, and it was just Lou and me, here in my cabin, surrounded by nothing but darkness outside.
This time, as they fight, the boy hits him with a club. The stranger finally goes down to his knees. The boy plunges a knife into the stranger's back. The stranger is dead. He has killed him. But he isn't happy about it. The stranger has fought so well, and the boy has spent all of this time with him, and he has learned so much about himself. He weeps for the stranger, and he carries him to the graveyard and buries him next to his grandmother. He visits the grave every day, looking after it the same way he looks after his grandmother's grave. Then one day, on the first day of spring, the boy finds a plant growing on the stranger's grave. He doesn't know what it is, but he tends to it all that spring and summer, until it is even taller than he is. In the fall, when he finally decides to open up the leaves on this plant, he finds yellow kernels. He tastes them, and they are sweet. This is how the people were given corn, through the death of this stranger.
He looked up at me, finally, his eyes wet. I wasn't sure what to say to him.
You told me everything that happened on that boat with Corvo, he said. Every detail, and I appreciate it. I know it was probably the scariest thing you ever lived through, but you trusted me enough to share it with me.
Lou, wait, how do you go from that story to...
The funny thing is, Alex, when he wanted to know what your name was, he took out your driver's license and he looked at it. You remember telling me that?
Yes. My wallet was right there on the table, next to my watch. He picked it up now, exactly as Corvo had done. He opened it and looked at my driver's license.
It makes sense, right? He's a smart guy. He knows your driver's license wouldn't lie.
I'm afraid I'm not following any of this.
Do you want to know what my driver's license says?
I just looked at him. I didn't answer.
It says the same thing yours does. My full name, Louis Vincent LeBlanc.
I still don't follow you.
My first name is Louis, he said. But nobody ever calls me that. Ever. I go by my middle name instead. Everybody I know, everybody, they all call me Vinny.
I shook my head. I still wasn't getting it. I was inches away, but still not there yet. He put my wallet back down. He had taken something from it. Not my driver's license, no. He had taken the card that Corvo had given to me. The card with the phone number. What are you doing with that? I said. Lou, come on. Still calling him Lou, because I knew that was his name. Even the old-timers here on the res called him Lou. He'd been Lou all his life. This whole strange business about everybody calling him Vinny. No, I said, feeling an icy wave wash over me. You can't be serious.
He's never met me, Alex. He'll never know the difference.
This is crazy. You know what Corvo will do to you. He won't just kill you.
I'm not afraid of him. Besides, I've done enough bad things in my life. I keep telling people I've repaid my debts, but I can't tell that same lie to you. I know I've caused a lot more pain than I've ever had to feel myself. A lot more, by a long shot.
No, I said. Stop it. Just stop talking like this. Even if it wasn't the craziest thing I've ever heard, it still wouldn't even work anyway. That maniac won't be satisfied if it's just some guy named Vinny who shows up. It was Buck who...
I couldn't say one more word. I stood up.
Alex, don't.
I pushed past him. I went outside and threw open the driver's side door of his rental car.
Where is he? Where's Buck?
I threw open the backseat door. There was nobody inside. Lou came up behind me.
He was a dead man anyway, Lou said. I did him a big favor. Corvo won't be happy about it. But what's he gonna do to me that he wasn't gonna do already?
I grabbed him by the shoulders.
Where is he? I said. God damn you, where is Buck?
He didn't fight back. He just looked at me with a cold and perfect serenity in his eyes. I looked back at the car. My heart stopped as it hit me. I pushed him away. Then I went to the driver's seat and fumbled around for the trunk release, finally found the button, and pushed it. The trunk popped open, and I went around at the back. Buck was inside. I couldn't process the fact that he was wearing a bathing suit. I couldn't process the fact that his body was wet. I put my fingers through his neck. Then something hit me in the back of the neck, and I was down on the ground, looking at the undercarriage of the car.
He drowned in his hot tub,
Lou said, his voice close to my ear.
It was quick, and it was painless. Now the two of us are going to Chicago, and you're not going to try to stop us.
It felt like my whole body was paralyzed. I didn't know what he hit me with. To this day, I still don't know. Maybe just his hand. Maybe he was that good.
You'll think about calling the police or coming after us, but then you'll realize you can't save Buck. He's already gone. But you can save Vinny. If this works, he's free. Forever.
Move your body, I said to myself. Get up and stop this madness.
Just to be sure, you gotta watch over him, Alex. Okay? Do you hear me? Watch over Vinny, or I swear to God, I'll come back from the other side and haunt you.
I saw his shoes as he went around to the driver's seat and got in. The car started up, sending a sick plume of exhaust right into my face. I reached out to grab the bumper, to stop the car, or to make him drag me all the way down the road. But the car pulled away from me, and I could only watch the taillights disappear around the bend in the road. The car passed Vinny's cabin, and then it was gone. I stayed on the ground for a long time. If it had been winter, I surely would have frozen to death. Vinny would have found my body the next morning. But it was summer, the end of July. It was the middle of the night, and it was cold, but not deadly cold. I felt the strength flowing back into my body. I pulled myself to my knees, then finally to my feet. I stood there thinking about every word he had said, his prediction about what I would do now. He was right. God damn him. He was right.